This is Context Free.
So I go through ebbs and flows with you know, newsletters and Twitter and different things, you know, I would say over the last, I don't know, 7-8 years, where I'll be like, oh, this is a good idea. I'll follow this. And then I'll, you know, I'll have something there. And then, so there's these information that's coming at me, whether it's about programming or whether it's about the news or something I should care about, you know, just, it's always things people are trying to get you to care about. So there's that type of stuff coming at you, which kind of goes up and down. And then you have the more sort of constant stream of better recommendations from your friends that are like, oh, have you seen this show? Or, you know, have you listened to this? Or have you played this game? Or have you watched this movie? Right. In short of like living every day with 300 tabs open in a browser and never accomplishing anything, plus creating some sort of list of all the best TV shows you must see to be a high functioning, whatever, you know,
human being in the world today,
or these are the games you, if you haven't played this game, well then clearly, you know, nothing about, you know,
yeah, you're a loser.
Go. I don't know if you're a loser, but you lose your standing to critique other things because you haven't, you know, if you haven't seen movies X, Y, and Z, well then how can you possibly talk about this movie, right? Not that anyone's out there saying that, but, you know, and not only is there this constant thing of new things, there's also, I mean, I could take any one of those segments of media and say, you know, oh, I need to go back and revisit the classics, right?
Like, I need to educate myself.
I need to go educate myself in the roots of where this modern thing came from, because this is where this person got inspired from. And you could say that about music. You could say that about video games. You'd be like, oh, you haven't played System Shock 2? Well, then what basis do you have to comment on?
Loser.
Whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you haven't played Super Meat Boy? Well, then you know nothing about indie games. You know, you haven't finished Fez? I mean, what's wrong with you? You know, TV shows probably less so, because I think there's less of a history of amazing have-to-see television shows than there is in probably the other things. You know, I mean, the TV shows that were great, we probably saw because there were only 3 channels of TV. They weren't hidden away somewhere. It was like, we probably consumed them, right? I've seen plenty of Cheers. I've seen plenty of Seinfeld. I've seen enough MASH. Like, I don't need to see every one. I've seen enough to comment.
But now.
Anyway, my point is with all that stuff, how do you handle, say, me or someone else you know is like, oh, have you read this book? Have you played this game? Like, where do you accumulate that stuff? And what urgency do you feel to what bumps those things up the list for you? And where do you stash it?
I guess I have this has actually been something I've thought about a lot, because I think it would be an interesting problem, right? Because if you go back to when Netflix first started out, one of the things I think people noticed after a while is that their Netflix queue became a sort of homework, right? So you put 2 kinds of things on the Netflix queue, things that you think you should watch to make yourself a better person and more educated.
And then you put Kurosawa films, right?
I mean, what's wrong? No knock Akira Kurosawa.
But I'm saying that's like, that's the sort of thing that you put on there to be like, I must educate myself.
Oh, yeah. No. Okay. So, yeah, it's a bad example for me because I've actually watched lots of his movies, but there's lots of things that I do put on my list that I don't end up watching. And then I look at my list and I feel bad about myself as a human being every single time I look at it, because I'm like, wow, if I really cared about culture, I would watch this documentary or this educational thing about history or whatever else. And some of it's things I'm interested in, right? But sometimes, you know, you've got to watch Firefly again, right? Or you've got to watch. I just watched, because I'm working on the side on some screenplay stuff, and I really like Shane Black, and I really like, and it was just Christmas not too long ago, right? So I watched Lethal Weapon over Christmas as a watching terrible 80s movies for Christmas. And so Shane Black was literally in Predator. He was one of the first.
Who's Shane Black? I'm not
Shane Black is he's a director. He made or director. I'm going to get this wrong cuz I'm not in the Hollywood industry, but he's a maker of movies, right? He writes films. And I think he directs them too, right? And so he just made the Nice Guys. He made, am I getting his name wrong? Now I'm doubting myself.
I don't know who he is.
Anyway, he's the guy that made Nice Guys. He made Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which has got to be one of my favorite movies ever.
See, now I feel inept because I haven't seen.
You haven't seen Kiss Kiss Bang Bang?
No.
Well,
so where should I put? Where should I
which
go?
Queue?
Put? Like,
which
where should I go? Put?
Which pile
first
of
I have to go find the streaming service that I subscribe to that has it, right?
I started giving the DVDs of that movie to people, and they still wouldn't watch it because I'm horrible. Anyway, no, it's a feeling of obligation, like that you're missing out, but also that I think it's different, right? Because I think there's missing out, which is not kind of participating in the culture and being the cool, like in having experiences, but there's just feeling like one should educate themselves, right? You have books piled up and the cat has arrived. Books piled up. I know I do, right? That someday I'm going to read because it's going to make myself a better person. Like I have like lots of Karl Popper's like Open Society and Its Enemies, like dense philosophy.
You'll be on your deathbed and you'll finally understand what it's all about.
Yeah. Well, I'll understand. I'll be really a thoughtful human being then. And
right.
No one can argue with me.
Man, if I'd only read this when I was 35.
No, it's a problem. And I think Netflix is emblematic and to take it back, like I was talking about Shane Black, because what did I watch like a couple weeks ago? I watched Predator again, which is like this terrible movie from the '80s, but it's a movie I enjoyed a lot as a kid. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I was going to watch again, and going through the motions of kind of reading about screenplays and the way that people, build story arcs specifically around screenplays. I'm like, I'm going to go watch a movie I know really well, because I watched it a billion times as a young child, right? And see if I catch anything that's kind of being set up or in terms of story structure and that sort of thing. And I'm not I actually haven't been doing my screenplay homework, but of reading all the books that most of my friends.
Do you feel bad about that?
I feel bad because I feel like I could be participating in a deeper level, but I do have a kind of a pile of books to kind of catch up with my friends around it. So that's like, I have like almost literal homework on an actual project that I'm actually working on that I feel like I should catch up.
Let the record show that I'm making a face.
But most of these things I think aren't that way, right? Like I have all sorts of books on religion and that sort of thing. And now we have a cat in between us who is inspecting everything. but I have all sorts of books that I really, I wouldn't say I have kind of an active project in, right? Like living life and that sort of thing is an active project. And so religion and philosophy and that sort of thing I think is always relevant. But I think it's harder to structure as something. But anyway, you asked me what I do, right?
Well, I think there's two interesting. Well, there's at least two things that I'm interested in talking about with respect to this problem. One is, what do you do? Where do you stash these things? And then the second thing I wanted to talk about was, is this a new problem, or are we different as people as we've gotten older? So let's talk about the first one first.
Are we? So, and I think there's also, is it a modern problem, is it a 2016 problem, right?
Yeah, so, as opposed to was this a mid-90s problem?
Yeah, so.
But let's hold off on that.
So what was the first question?
The first question is what do you, where do you stash these things? Because I'm talking across all these different media, right? And we're talking books, television shows, movies that might be current or you know, DVD past, maybe not even on DVD, hard to find, etc. Video games, right? There's all these different types of media that I think we like to consume, not even counting the hyper modern types of media. Like, have you seen that viral video on YouTube, right? Because there's that level of currents of those are the sorts of things where if you don't see them that week, and then someone finds out later that, you know, you never saw some viral video, like you're now missing out on a lifetime of memes because you don't even know what someone's talking about.
Well, I think that's always been true, right? Like if you hadn't your Greek back in the day, right? Like, and you didn't have your history and you weren't read in the Bible, like you weren't participating in the culture, right? Like now it's those foundational things.
But there used to be a canon.
There used to be a canon. Yeah, so but you're getting to
I'm
the
getting
next
the
question.
Second point. Yeah,
you're
yeah,
getting
yeah.
to the next
right,
question.
Right. But I was just saying it's not just those traditional media. It's also, you know, have you read you know, My President was Black by Ta-Nehisi Coates, you know, like, you know, have you read that article? Have you seen such and such video, right? There's all these hyper modern sorts of things as well. But anyway, yeah. So what do you do?
All right. So, I actually, this is when I was younger, I thought that this was an actual problem that maybe we could fix. And
younger, like college or
no, just like 10 years ago, I was like, you know, what'd be neat is if we had like a way to fix this problem that was really good. And
what would that
I have a lot
like?
Of hacks right now.
What would that have looked like?
Well, so I was a little into, you're familiar with, getting things done. But yeah, so I was kind of into that at one point, as many nerdy people were during that time frame. Right. And, that has a lot of kind of different stresses, in terms of, you know, capture of information. Right. Mm-hmm. And I also was always really into books. I have a lot of books. I've given a lot away and I've sold a lot of them, or donated a lot of them. I don't think I've sold any of them.
I don't think I have either.
That would be an abomination to take money for my books. No. I have to pay $45 for them new and then give them away. So one of the first problems I had is like, I was spending too much money on books. Like I was just buying them and then they were becoming house insulation, right? It's a really expensive form of insulation for your house. Yep. It's delightful, but it's steep. And so I started using Amazon's kind of lists.
Wish list?
Yeah.
Wish list, yeah.
And I just created a private one.
Because you can just bookmark anything on those things.
Yeah. Yeah, so I have, at one point I had like eight, right? Like I had
eight
like,
lists?
Yeah, well I had like my list of like philosophical texts to read someday, right? And then I had, you know, computer science history and then modern programming problems, like, and so I had this mashup of lists. And I fairly recently,
we're not even talking about when are we gonna all find time to write our own web servers, but
I mean,
anyway,
yeah, go. I mean in bytecode or bitcode, sorry, we're in the Mac world now, it's bitcode. I really, that made, it feels really sad, but it made a big difference. Cause I could get that kind of experience of clicking the buy button, but I didn't pay for anything, right? Mm-hmm. Like it went into this bucket and I knew someday later I could find it. And, I recently went through and merged all these things and I was fascinated about how I would, kind of find some books in there, and I was shocked that they were there 7 years ago or something. And I can't think of an example, but you know how in life when you learn a new word, right, you suddenly, or a name, right, or an author or a musician or something, suddenly you see that everywhere, right? And it's not because it wasn't there, it's because you didn't it was meaningless before.
Sure.
And now it's a real thing. But I've had that with my book problem, right? As I go back and I'm looking at like 2007 in my Amazon list. I think this was over Christmas and I'm finding these books. I'm like, I don't remember making a note to go write or to read this book, you know, about totalitarianism or some, or this author that now I'm really into, but I didn't even know at the time. So it's kind of fascinating how, that timeline, like if I could see that in this big expansive timeline, like that I had kind of encountered some of these same categories and authors and concepts before a couple times throughout that time. So that was that was a fascinating piece of like mental archaeology of my list of things that I never bought. Mm-hmm. But anyway, to answer your question, the Amazon list is fantastic. I also use Instapaper. I think you started using that too. I can't remember.
I've used Instapaper for a while.
Yeah.
I don't, I don't actively use it. There'll be times when there's some really long article and I'll toss it on there. And then when I'm on a plane, I'll pop it open and be like, oh yeah, I never read this. And it's away.
12 months later.
Exactly.
Right. So it's
that's how I read some really long Atlantic articles.
But it's like, it's a way to not do your homework, but I'll do it later. Right. So you,
I
use it the same way I use Amazon, as I'm like, oh, this is a great article about the ad technology industry that I should know more about because I work in the ad technology industry. I'm going to save that article to my Instapaper account, right? Uh-huh. And then occasionally I'll go open it up. But it makes me, it makes me feel like I have the ability kind of to delve into that in the future. Uh-huh. So I like Instapaper as a tool. I use Watch It Later on YouTube a lot.
Oh, what is that?
YouTube has ways to save those little clips.
Okay.
And they have buckets, just like you can be OCD and create little buckets.
See, like with YouTube, I'm kind of like the kid who can't wait for two cookies later. With YouTube, it's like, oh, there's a cookie in front of me. Like other things I can wait on.
Yeah.
But there's something about,
I mean, it's the
videos because they're so short.
It's the design, right?
Right. It's
but
3 minutes long. It's like, it's not going to be relevant tomorrow. I'm
well,
going to watch it right now.
Now this goes into the difference between the kinds of content we consume, right? Like a lot of the videos that I watch are 20 minute to like 1 hour videos.
Yeah. When you send me those things, just know that I'm not watching.
No,
them.
I
just
figured them out. And I'm to the point where it's like, sometimes I'm like, I will send you a time code. Just watch the 3 minutes at this time code between the
I
hours 4:65 and 4. And no, you don't. But,
I'm saying I might. If somebody was like, go here and watch this 3 minutes, I would do that.
Yeah. But
if somebody sends me an hour video.
I understand. No, I get it. But I want to share things with people. Like,
so do we all. So do we all.
So.
And that was my question is where do we stash those things, which you've answered.
Well, and I also use OmniFocus for things, right? Like so OmniFocus is the original. Not the original, but one of the early applications created to do GTD on the Mac. It was originally now I'm going to speak about things I don't know well about, but I think originally it was a cobbled together bunch of scripts. And I think the Omni group.
OmniGraffle.
Yeah, OmniGraffle, okay. Omni Outliner, Omni. Yeah, so it's the same company, Omni Group, and I use that. I've done it on my phone or anything else. So that's one of my places that I they have a capture category. Mm-hmm. They have an inbox, right? And so I can dump things in there. And it's a little more structured than some of the other kind of capture mechanisms like this. So you can provide context. So what I was getting at and the problem that I wanted to fix is what I want with these capture mechanisms is a way to provide metadata. And the reason why is I listen to a lot of podcasts because I have a podcast problem. I read a lot of things, and I'll save these books to these, you know, Amazon lists that are all save things to Instapaper. And then I'm like, which project or which life goal, right? Like was tied to reading this book that I don't remember
Why
I put on.
Yeah, I'll have books. So I use Goodreads for my tracking my books. That's where I use. And the thing I like about Goodreads is anytime I go to the bookstore, I'll always check there. And what's nice about it is I have enough friends on there because it automatically hooks up all my Facebook friends. So people I know. So I get a decent hit rate on things that I might want to read where it's like, oh, I have some friend who actually has read this. And so that's useful, like getting that. And that's really what I want, but for everything.
Yeah. So
I want to play. So I think Goodreads does this really well. Is it highlights the people I know and what they thought about that thing without them having to like constantly broadcast to everybody and post like, I just read a book on Goodreads. Like I only have to encounter them reading it when I'm going look for it. It's not broadcast at me all the time. I like that.
It's a pull medium.
I like it. It works for books for me. Again, it's another one of these sites where like the entire rating scheme is between 3.5 and 4.5, like pretty much every rating scheme. And
if they wrote about it, they either completely hated it.
No,
or
just
it's one of their
general
favorite things.
It's like Yelp, right? It's if it's 3 stars, then it has rats. And if it, if it's like, there is no point of even having 1 and 2 star ratings in aggregate.
So, So what you get there, though, is you get stars. You get, like, notes. Do you put
they
notes?
Can write a review if they want. It's stars, and then they can optionally add notes.
So what I want is, why is this here, right? Mm-hmm. So I'll hear a lot of books. Like, there'll be a lot of people showing up on Econ Talk, and they'll talk about their book, and I'll save it to some list. And I won't remember, you know, oh, this is from Econ Talk in this episode. Why did I want to see this again? Or is this because it's interesting about kind of an economics topic or whatever? So I get what you're saying in terms of you're choosing whether or not it's worth your time, and you're losing this social currency of whether or not your friends have reviewed it, right?
Well, it just gives me more information.
Okay.
Right? Like, if I'm at the bookstore, because I do actually like going and looking at the covers. I enjoy that. Right. And so I look at them, and then I will sit there like in tattered cover or whatever. And I will, every time I'm there, I probably look up five things on Goodreads just to see. Right. And if it's a 3.2, I'm like, meh, get out of here.
Oh, nobody wants that.
Nobody wants that one. But if then I look it up and I'm like, oh, I know a couple people that read that. And, you know, then I might add it to my list. So, I think that works well. I would like to have something like that for Netflix.
Yeah.
Like that type of thing would be nice.
I would like it to be for everything. Right? Like I would like to be able to capture that information and not have it tied to a vendor, right? Because I would like I would like it to be kind of a meta service that's provided.
Well, that's what Goodreads is for books.
Yeah, but it's like no vendor. Specific. Right,
it's specific,
and it's owned by aren't they owned by Amazon? Aren't they an Amazon?
I don't know,
an Amazon company. Okay, maybe I don't know. But you're really looking for kind of context of.
I'm more curious. I mean, I use Goodreads for that. I use Board Game Geek for board games I want to play.
Obviously.
I'll use just the iOS App Store wish list for mobile games that I see and I don't really want to spend right now. Although the price on those is so low that I usually just, if it's $1, $2, $3, I just buy it. Like,
yeah,
I don't even bother with a wish list there. It's just like, oh, I'll play it.
Well, that goes back to YouTube, right? And when you say that you're the kid that stuffs all the marshmallows in his mouth, right? Instead of waiting to get more marshmallows, like that little psych test. I think YouTube is kind of built on that model of like their 1 minute videos or 30 second videos, right?
Yeah.
And from a GTD perspective, like, why make a project out of this? Just do it right now, right? Like, there's an efficiency there where you're not you're choosing to spend a small amount of your attention right on that thing now, so it makes more sense. Whereas
here's the one that's
here's
the one that is really where I really wanted to go after the normal media.
It's not Netflix.
No, so I think I should unsubscribe, but I'm pretty sure that Hacker Newsletter makes me feel like the worst human being alive
because you don't know anything that's they're talking about.
Well, no, I like I'm familiar with terms and whatever, but there's so much information of all these damn productive people doing all these things that you just feel like garbage.
It's kind of, so what you're saying is it's essentially a way to trigger your mental comparison with other people. Like because of how like psycho productive these people are, you're like, wow.
Well, what I have to recognize is that this is some edited list of things. It's not like there's a group of five people that are producing all of this crap in Hacker Newsletter.
Right.
So I understand that.
It's not like one guy that did all those things.
No. I mean, thank goodness. But there's a lot of stuff there. And it's you know, wow, there's a lot of things. And then you immediately go to like, well, what am I doing? Shouldn't I, you know, but it's the giving back to all the free stuff that we consume, right? I mean, think of all the free internet stuff that we consume all the time. And it's like, what percent of people actually contribute to those, to things that other people get for free? I don't know if there's any stats on that.
At all. Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of lurkers. I feel like there's a lot of lurkers just in life, right? Like that people just go along and they do what they were doing and they just kind of like, so I don't feel like media is much different, that, you know, there's like a 3% of people that are really kind of actively contributing. Now, social media obviously has made that a little bit different, but I don't think it's made it completely different. Right?
So do you get Hacker Newsletter?
I do, and I don't read it.
I don't either.
It's one of like 20 newsletters that I'm subscribed to that I don't feel particularly bad about not reading most of the time.
If I don't read it in the first 2 hours after I notice it's there, I won't read it.
No, because then it's old and like,
no,
why
no,
would
no
you
it's not
read
old.
That?
It's not old, but it's like at that point I've already defeated the guilt. I may as well just delete it.
Right. There's no motivation. It's just gone.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to feel bad.
Yeah. Nothing like beating yourself up over not reading the Hacker Newsletter.
Well, or just not, you know, learning Erlang this weekend and, you know.
You are terrible.
And writing a dog walking program in it or something.
Yeah. Isn't that the best interview question?
What's that?
How do you keep up to date on the latest technologies? And blah, blah, blah. Like, I love that. I love when people ask me that in job interviews, and I'm like, you're just going to think I'm a dick no matter what I answer to this thing, unless I'm like, well, I built 35 different web servers in 35 different languages in the last 2 weeks. And they're like, oh, well, I guess you're an okay person.
Yeah, there's no judging in those things.
None. Well, I mean, they're built around. They're just, so it's just, it's hilarious. I guess that's a FOMO category, right? I mean, email is just this terrible nightmare of doom.
The tech stuff is a FOMO category because, so for instance, with like just keeping up in iOS land and you know, all the different things, and there's people who've been doing that for a long time and they're great at it. You know, Swift has been nice because it's been a little bit of a reset button where it was like, I came in at a nice time where I'm not a compiler hacker, but I feel relatively caught up to, you know, what's happening. Like I do know kind of what's happening in the Swift world to some degree, certainly above average. But you get some newsletter and it's got like 8 libraries and let's just put aside the whole thing of like, you should not be stuffing your apps and your projects with like random libraries just cause like that's a whole nother, you know, you should not be doing like gem install just cause.
But
right?
It's cool.
Right. But my point is that like they're there, which immediately starts to raise questions around, mm-hmm. Oh, well, should I have wrote that myself or should I have used that guy's library that did that for, you know, you have that whole thing coming into play. I mean, what I find, even just using libraries I use, is that while it saves me time, it's also always, always the number one time suck when it comes to any type of migration, when it comes to any type of mm-hmm. memory leak or any type of thing that comes up. It's like, because it's not something you wrote, it's usually the most painful and the most friction involved, because it's like, oh, when are they going to have, you know, when are they going to have their update and whatever? And you start to become indignant that this person wrote something for free that you're using and that they didn't keep it up to date, you know, when the compiler updated. But so there's a bit of a, you know, you're making this constant decision over what you should do versus, you know, should I be aware of these different libraries? And I think, you know, that's just, you learn how to do those over time, but it's a FOMO category because if you don't pay attention at all, mm-hmm. you're like, oh man, what if I just do this and I make up my own whatever, and then you find out that, you know, you wrote, you know, I would try to think of something, you wrote your own logging thing and there's like 4 of them that are, you know, just widely, widely used. Like, why in the world would you go and do that? Right. So you have to kind of have some awareness. You just have to not obsess over it.
Well, at least you're not part of the JavaScript ecosystem. So then you'd have that like an hourly sort of,
I think,
experience.
I said something at a point that was really funny about like the whole thing of like, oh, we use this library, okay, well now we have to go do this, and you end up like, you know, 38 layers yak shaving, and you know, it's
funny to kind of watch all these different ecosystems and how they have different levels of comfort with the amount of change over time, right? Because there's no technical reason why like all these different languages don't kind of do the same thing that you kind of see in JavaScript, where it's just a constant like, oh, and this is the new library to do promises, and this is the new library to right. do that. There's no technical reason that doesn't happen.
By the way, I think there's about 4,500 different promise libraries.
Oh, yeah. No. Least. And there's one in the language now, right? Like, there's one in ES6 or 2016 or whatever it's called. I can't even keep track of what mm-hmm. that.
But I just saw this article the other day in Hacker Newsletter, and it was like, is it pronounced Postgres?
That's how I say
okay,
it.
That's how I say it.
We can say Postgres. And
I saw somebody the other day say post-gray, and I was like, I've never heard anyone say that.
Post-gray?
But I was like, maybe I've been saying it wrong.
Excuse me, sir. I believe it's pronounced post-gray.
But anyway, the article was like, you know, is Postgres SQL enough? Right? And so the whole article was...
enough for...
Well, exactly. So I was like, I'm interested in what this is about, even though I don't use it, right? And I look in there, and it's like about how you can... use the things in the database to get your small project started. They're like, but if you're doing a real project, then of course you're using Redis for this and Celery for this and you know, like 15 different things of all of these different frameworks that you have up to do things around your database. And I'm sitting there and I'm simultaneously like in the way you look at an optical illusion where you're like can't see both at the same time. Right. I'm simultaneously feeling like completely relieved that I don't have this problem and also completely inadequate of like, oh my God, what if I needed to get a job doing Postgres? I have no idea what I'm doing. I would need to know all these 15 things. I couldn't just know the database anymore. Right. I mean, there's people out there that are database people and they barely know SQL, but yet you have to know all these other 15 things to run a real database.
Yeah.
You know what I'm
saying? Like, no, I do. I think it's one of the things I've encountered in tech hiring, right, is like this obsession that you have like these specific skill sets. Meanwhile, like everyone's a newbie on 90% of the things that they're using because they started using it in the last 2 weeks, right?
Well, no. More like, and meanwhile, somebody knows all these things, but they're still doing something like, you know, writing like N+1 style queries to go and get child objects or something. Do you know what I'm saying? Like they're not, they don't write like just a proper...
Yeah.
Join or something. Like it's that sort of thing where, great, you know all this specific thing, but just the basic knowledge of like how to not shoot yourself in the foot, because you haven't shot yourself in the foot in that way before, which we all have. And you know what I'm saying? It's like, that's often missing.
Yeah. Well, that's the new, that's the problem with ecosystems that are stressing the new, right? Is that people learn... They learn how to use these new frameworks, right? And they don't have any foundational knowledge. And so... Their skill set is using, like, you'll encounter this with Rails devs, and it used to be a thing that I felt like I would encounter a lot with .NET developers, right, is that they knew how to use WCF in the case of .NET, or Rails developers, they know how to use Rails, but they don't know Ruby, right? Like, they know how to work in a particular framework really well, because that's kind of their day-to-day is this... I don't want to say cut and paste, but pattern matching on the same patterns over and over again. But they haven't learned the language that they're...
It's the difference between knowing tourist Spanish and being able to write a book in Spanish.
Or, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like you know the tour. You know the language as a tourist.
Yeah. It's like that. I that's a good analogy. I still think that frameworks and languages are not the same. In a lot of ways, and I mean, I've encountered this problem pretty recently, just around exceptions and people that have used the language that I'm working in right now, right, like, which has been Java for a long time, and people that have done that for 5 years that can't tell the difference between our runtime exceptions and just our regular exceptions. And I'm like, how have you not had the inquisitiveness to solve this, to figure this out? Like, this has had to have made your life unpleasant at some point, and you ran into it and things did not work. And anyway, it's just baffling to me. But I think that is the result of people that operate in these kind of high change, use the new framework kind of ecosystems, and don't spend the effort to get get a foundational knowledge. But it could be I'm just old and I'm hitting people with my cane, right? Like, if you just learned the classics, you wouldn't have this problem, right? Like, right. I'm open.
Lenny Bruce made that joke in the 70s.
Yes. But I think they can both be true, right? Like, it's one of those kind of holding both things in your head situations where
was Lenny Bruce in the 60s?
I think so.
He's probably
most,
dead.
Most
then,
of the
right?
pictures I've seen of him were in black and white. Or the footage. I'm pretty sure the footage I've seen of him was in black and white. So
we'll go back to the 60s.
We'll go back to the 60s and flower power it out, because I'm pretty sure he'd been harassed to death by then.
I brought up Hacker Newsletter, and we kind of got into the big tech thing around that, because that was the real genesis of this topic for me, was the fear of missing out. The real fear comes with the tech stuff. I don't actually have the other stuff is more like GOMO. It's guilt of missing out. There's no fear. I don't actually have any fear that I'm missing out on a book or a game or a movie.
Well,
it's all just like, oh, I'd like to be informed.
Yeah, you just want to be able to do your job and not be able to find a new job someday, right? Like you want to not become irrelevant, right? Like that's why the tech stuff matters in that way, is because it's, I mean, I'm speaking for you, but I should be speaking for myself, right? Like why I care about that sort of things is, and on one level, I enjoy it. That's why I got into development and engineering in the first place. But on another level, you also don't want to be the person who's like, "Whoa, what's that technology?" And when you do need to kind of convey some competence or anything else, right?
Okay,
so
right.
Is that where do you think that's where the fear comes from? Or?
It is. No, that's where the fear comes from. And this is the segue I wanted to make across the programming stuff and the media stuff. So this is kind of where I was going with this all along. Is the whole generalist versus specialist decision, right? So there's people who just watch B sci-fi flicks, right? They don't give a crap about the Academy Awards or high culture or whatever, right? There are people that just play shmup games,
right?
And they don't care about, you know, your story in your game or whatever. Like they're just like, I am all about this. This is all I do, right? Or there are people who get in it. Obviously, in books, it's probably the most extreme of this, of people that just read a certain genre or a certain type of whatever, right? Where they're not even trying to be like, oh, I sample the whole smorgasbord of, you know, modern fiction, and I know all these different genres, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's just people that are just like totally, like they know their thing, and that's really all they care about, and they are 99% totally okay with that. Like,
yeah,
that's what, and they like, I envy them. They figured out what they like, right?
Maybe, or they got stuck, right? I mean, so it could be they figured out what they like.
So I'm gonna, those people.
I want to talk about Bruce Sterling now. So keep going.
Okay, but those people are like in programming, they're the people who are like, you know, people just chugging away with. They're C++ and doing amazing things and doing great things, and they don't really.
Some of them are. So what you're saying is they have developed taste, right? And they have developed specifically their taste
and depth of knowledge,
right?
And so the depth of knowledge is the thing that links tech with media,
right? So they have developed a taste to complement. So they've developed a depth basically because they developed a taste, right? And they were going to go deep in that, but that's not everybody that's worked in. Kind of a monoculture for a long period of time. Some of those people are just coasting, right? Forever, yeah. Right? So
I'm not talking about them.
No, I know, but they're kind of hard to tell apart sometimes when you're on the outside, right?
Sure. Yeah. If it's not your expertise, yeah, it can be hard to tell.
So, yeah, but yeah, I mean, having taste is a thing, right? Like and I don't think it's bad.
You're expanding the meaning of taste here beyond what I'm talking about. I have my own taste in things. It's just that my tastes, I like variety, right? Like I like to read different types of books. Like
right.
I don't find an author and read every damn book by that author, right? Like I don't like do that type of thing. I don't go deep into catalogs of things. I like to survey. And that's not appreciated at all by the specialists. Let me just tell you, like in both tech and media.
No, because you're a dilettante, right? Like that's from their perspective, right? They're going to be like, well, yeah, look at this dilettante show up. He doesn't know the proper bite ordering of this, you know, like whatever.
Right.
Like,
right.
I mean, I'm sympathetic to that. And I wonder kind of where I land on that spectrum. Cause I feel like I consume a broad set of stuff, just in general. But I also go deep on some things. Like there's, I just got a book from Amazon the other day. And I literally, I think I have every single other English language book by the same person, right? So he published a book that's essentially of his magazine writing over the last, 20 years. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to add that to my collection.
Cause you love this guy.
Cause I love this guy. But I also like, I feel like I'm very broad, but I also, try to go deep on some things at times. But I think maybe you do too, just in bursts, right? Like where you, is that wrong? Where you go, you're like, oh, I'm gonna dive into this particular category. Maybe it's not an author, but maybe it's a category. Or no, you're just like, and now it's time to move on to.
I mean, what are we talking? What media are we talking about?
Well, I mean, originally we were talking about tech, and we were talking about books, right? And so you mentioned like you don't read all of an author, right? And I it's just top of mind because like sitting right over there is a Stephen Batchelor book. I think I have all of his English language books, right? So I was wondering, is that like, what is you, so you like variety, but you also have specific interests, right? You're not reading, making clay pots all day, right? Like, and maybe you are reading clay pots.
No. I mean, I think I don't think I have like that. I'm not a fast reader. I'm not a prolific reader. I
says the man that's talking about a different book every time I show up at his house.
Is that true?
It seems like it's true.
Huh? Maybe I don't finish them. I don't know.
Maybe I just
read the summary.
Maybe you're just making it up.
Maybe I'm just.
Oh, I read this. Have you read this book? Oh, you haven't, but I have.
No, I'm not like that.
No, I know, but. Since we're imagining nefarious motivations for you, it's just that you want everyone to think you're erudite.
No, I think that
it seems like you do read a lot of books. That's all I'm trying to say. Maybe you.
I don't think I do. I really don't.
How many do you think you read a year?
A dozen.
Really? Like one a month?
Yeah.
Paper books.
Not that many.
No, it's not.
It's not.
It's not. I need to go and count the ones I do now because I have absolutely no idea because I have an Audible problem.
Yeah, like last year on Goodreads, I set up a challenge for myself of 20 books and I didn't meet it.
Wow. Okay. All right. I feel like I'm judging you, but I also probably did not read more than you last year too, and I just think that I did, right? Because
the sad part is I had read, I believe, 9 books by April, and then I think I read 3 books the rest of the year.
Well, you had a busy year. You had a lot of things
to
do.
I don't know. But now I'm in this book club.
Uh-oh.
Well, I'd been in a book club for a long time. We had started, so my Stacy and I and some friends of mine in Chicago, we had one for 6 years, probably 2004, 2010. And I read a lot of books through that, and it was good. It was a good way to get a variety of different people's.
Right, right.
You know, that's just a good part. And this book club is too. Seems like this will be a nice wide range. I go, sometimes I love book clubs, sometimes I hate them. I love them sometimes. Well, I like them because I get input on other people's books that I never would have come across. But I also don't, there's 2 things I don't like about them. One is sometimes mm-hmm. people pick shitty books and you feel obligated to finish them.
Other people are just terrible.
No, just sometimes, like people picking a 500-page book for a book club is
It's kind of an asshole. It's kind of being a dick.
It's like, don't do that.
But they care a lot. They really want to.
But it's like sending somebody a video that's an hour long and being like, here, watch this.
Why? Yeah, some asshole would do that. Right? Hey, I just got a 24-hour book on Audible. So I downloaded a book on Audible. I'm sorry. Now I'm really tangenting. But I downloaded a book on Audible today and I was like, oh my God, this is 23 and a half hours. All righty then. Moving on.
Yeah.
So I didn't send that to you. So no. I'm low on the asshole specter. I'm just like I'm kidding.
But at the same time, I listened to countless hours of podcasts last year.
Yeah.
So it's not like I, honestly, for a while, I think a big problem was being able to see. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
Like I got these glasses last fall, and it's actually made reading not a chore. It's like I can put them
it's
on
fun again.
Well, I can put them on. They're comfortable and I can see what I'm doing. I would say for the previous 2 years, just using like crappy Walgreens glasses, it was like not comfortable and I couldn't really see well. And you're sitting there straining trying to read. I just didn't want to read.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I mean it was
like
It was like work.
Either consciously or unconsciously unpleasant, right?
It was unpleasant. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So getting glasses has definitely helped.
Do you have a Kindle? You have a Kindle, don't you?
I do. I probably read 50-50.
Okay. And you mostly fiction? You read mostly fiction or
for like if I'm choosing or this book club or what are you talking about?
Oh, the book club is not a fiction book club. It is a whatever one wants to read book club.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. So, but do you think
it was actually voted? It was like there was a big vote. Like there was a nomination process. I've never been. I just joined it. I've only been to two so far.
Okay.
And so they nominated all these books. Everyone nominated books in December, and then there was a big like rank sort vote.
Wow. Okay.
And then here's the 12 books for the year.
Okay.
So there you go.
Good to know.
Do you find that weird?
No, it's people getting together. Like, I have some friends. They used to have movie night. And one of the reasons I stopped going is I kept bringing movies and they would never watch my movies because they had this like complex voting system that resulted, whether intentionally or unintentionally, in my movies never being watched. I would bring Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and like something else every week, and they were like, "Oh, I guess we're watching this." And I'm like, "But I don't. Oh, I need a game theory book."
So since I wasn't a part of that book club before, I didn't even nominate anything. Right. I just was like, I'll just see and.
But so do you think in general though that you read like mostly fiction or mostly nonfiction?
If it's up to me choosing, it's going to be nonfiction because.
Oh really?
And it's going to probably hit the history.
Okay.
Just because it's like a story, but I'm a bad reader of fiction. Like I am.
You're going to have to explain that a little bit.
I have poor reading comprehension.
Who is this character? I don't know who they
are. I mean, I always feel like one of the dumbest people at book club meetings because people will be talking about themes in books and what happens, and I'll be like, oh, okay. Like, I always feel very stupid.
All right. Well, I guess sometimes.
Like, I do not know how to read very deeply into fiction books. Like, I'm very much a surface reader, so that's why I like history, because it's exposition. It's like I'm not expected to read into anything. The author is telling me what I need to know, and it's very just like,
yeah, it's not implicit. Like there's very little that's implicit in history, right? Like,
I don't have to sit there and figure out the theme and feel like a dumbass when I completely missed the point of the book.
I think this is a topic for later though, because I really think one of the things that people do is they project onto works, right? And project whatever themes they kind of want to see there, and sometimes they're right, right? Sometimes they're right, and sometimes they're seeing things, and sometimes they're committing apophenia or
what's apophenia?
Seeing things that aren't there, right? So. There's like three or four different words for it. That's actually a really good blog, which we can talk about later by Dana Boyd. She writes a blog called Apophenia, and Dana Boyd is amazing. And if you haven't read Pattern Recognition by
I have.
Okay, so
book
like,
club from
really,
and it was my pick.
Really, William Gibson is what it's my favorite William Gibson book. I think I read it like four times.
I like that book.
It is fantastic. There's two more in that trilogy, and I
read Spook Country, which I didn't like as much.
Yeah, and me neither. And his latest, I didn't like very much at all. But I love.
I like Pattern Recognition.
Pattern Recognition. I'm blanking on the word he uses for it. Is all about apophenia, right? Like it's all about seeing patterns, and doesn't mean those patterns are there, mm-hmm. right? Or I guess it doesn't mean that those patterns exist outside of your head, right? And how we're kind of pattern recognizing critters. Anyway, it's one of those areas of fascination for me, right?
Sorry, I don't want to interrupt.
No.
So you're talking about fiction versus nonfiction. I was trying to explain my more relative affinity for nonfiction, but I should caveat that with saying that what sort of bugs me is a lot of modern fiction. So like modern literature style fiction.
Okay.
Right. And I mean like literature, like things that are produced today.
I believe it's called literature.
That are not just genre style things. So I can really get into and be very entertained by a genre book.
Yeah.
In the same way that I can watch a genre. So my taste in books tends to be very similar. It mirrors like what I would like to watch in television shows. Okay.
Okay.
So no, I like the heavy genre things. Like okay. Game of Thrones is a very heavy genre
sure.
thing. Right. And I could read a book like that. It's plot, it's characters.
Right.
There's tension, there's intrigue. It's like there's no deeper allegory going on in Game of Thrones.
Okay.
I mean
it's the war, it's the War of the Roses, right? But yeah.
You don't need to know that to enjoy the hell out of it.
Very true. Very okay. true.
So you just
right. Oh, so what you're saying is with literature, like when you don't get the cleverness, it's not fun.
Well, so I'm reading this book now, The Golem and the Genie, The Golem and the Djinn, right?
Okay.
And it's the 470 page book reading for this book.
So it's about like Judaism and Islam encountering each other or
yeah.
Okay.
See, how did you know that?
Because Golem is a piece of mythology.
So that's, okay. so that's probably what it's about. And it's probably the whole subtext of what I should be caring about in this book. But I just got to page 179 and the two title characters finally meet.
Yeah.
And there's just all of this stuff. And I'm just like, I'm not entertained. I'm wasting my time. Like, why?
It's called anticipation.
No. this book on its own is not pissing me off. But these style of books drive me crazy. Where the author just feels like, oh, look, I found this non-realism sort of thing, so I'm just going to be too clever by half with everything and right. just have all this flowery stuff.
Just feels masturbatory.
Exactly. It's like, dude, get an editor and just tell me a story. Just tell me a story.
You obviously don't understand the world of literature. Yeah. There's so many places to go with that. Like, just talking about like genre versus literature, right? And this dichotomy that we've created or that was created for us, right? Between those two categories and like what literature really is and what makes something genre, et cetera.
See, you're
right?
using that voice. You're almost implying that it's highbrow versus lowbrow.
Well, but I am not taking that position, but I am saying that that is a very common position, and that's probably the most common position if you just encounter someone on the street and say, talk about genre fiction versus literary fiction. It implies to, I think, most people that it is highbrow versus lowbrow. And I think I'm a big...
I want someone to tell me a story when I'm reading a book.
Yeah, those I don't care bastards.
I don't care if it's nonfiction, right? Or if it's fiction. Like, I want a story. I want the author to tell me a story. I don't want to read a history book that's all a bunch of facts and theories. That's not the sort of history book I want to read. I want to read something where there's a narrative, right? Where I can care about the historical characters. I can understand what they're thinking. I can understand what some of their motivations might have been. I can find some way to grab on and relate to them.
So you loaned me, I think it was Simon Sinek's Code a long time ago. Well, maybe not a long time ago. I'm pretty sure you loaned that to me. Hopefully I gave it back to you.
Yeah, now why did I love that so much?
Yeah, well, because there are characters in that story, right? Like, aren't
it's
there?
It's been a long time since I've read been, it. It's been yeah, a long time since I've read it.
It's been a while since I read it, too.
I loved both of his books. Fermat's List.
Oh, I haven't read that one. I need to add it to my list.
Go put that on your Amazon list.
Fermat? Is it Fermat?
No, I think it's... I always call it Fermat. I don't know. Maybe it's Fermat. I don't know. But that book, also by him, also great. And it does... Yeah, no, there is a story. It's not just like, here's a theorem and...
Yeah, no, I think that actually, if my memory serves me, I think that was a little bit trending towards not as storied, but most of the places he sets each kind of quantum leap in cryptography in a historical context,
right,
that is narrative, right? And that's why, like the story of
it's really been a while. I can barely remember. That book always just sticks in my head as like one I want to read again.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's, yeah, I enjoyed it, and I've touched base on on many of those kind of topics and pieces of history from other things that I read. I'm not sure that I could.
You enjoyed it?
Point them out. Yeah, I did. I enjoyed Alan Turing's biography, right? Like, and that's a biography, but at the end of the day,
it's the Enigma machine stuff. That's the stuff that I remember from the code book.
It's
really
good. And it's just like a heartbreaking kind of piece of history, how this person that made such a difference in winning the second fucking world war.
Right.
And
was treated very unfairly.
And the computers that we create nowadays are often called or referred to as Turing machines, right? Like, for reasons that we'll skip over. But it's just such a heartbreaking story. But it's the story of crypto, right? And the story
of
Bletchley Park.
Not good.
Oh, well, it's also...
That was bad. That was bad.
Well, I mean, how do you turn that into a movie, right?
It was like, so disappointing.
Well, they reduced... Like, there were, like, what hundreds and hundreds of women doing the calculator job at Bletchley Park, right? And they reduced them down to one person. That's I actually haven't watched it. I wanted to, but I figured I read, I don't know, like 1,200 pages or whatever. Wow. I don't know. It's huge. It's immense. It's over there on my shelf.
I don't really read biography. I should. Because it fits right into what I say.
Yeah,
I like.
It's history and it's narrative, like, together.
I should read more biography.
I don't know. You're using the should word, man. And
what's that? What's wrong with that?
It's it's expressing an obligation, right? Like, it's expressing.
Oh,
that
okay.
So, the,
I would like to read Robert Caro's books about LBJ. How's
fair
that?
Enough. Fair enough.
I would like to read those.
Yeah,
it would probably take me 80 years to get through them.
Yeah, I was actually kind of fascinated with some of the things that were left out of the biography that I read of Turing, right? Like, and we're like way down some path. I don't know where we are, but one of the, like, how he died, right, is that he ate like an apple a day, right?
Okay,
that was like a thing that he did, that they talk about in this book, and he had this, you know, he had his chemistry set with him, and he would play chemistry things, and he poisoned himself. He essentially made a poisoned apple and poisoned himself. And that
really,
that's really glossed over in the narrative. Yeah. Well, so, and then there's I don't remember if it's Vanity Fair or something, but somewhere outside of this immense biography, right, I'm reading, and I'm pretty sure it was Vanity Fair, about how Turing was like really into, you know, the evil queen from Snow White. And that's, well, as a gay man in that period, right, like that spoke to him somehow, right? Okay. And he poisoned himself.
I don't know anything about Alan Turing, like, other than sort of
the
first paragraph of the Wikipedia article. That's about what I know.
But I was just fascinated how I read this immense biography of him, and then that like poison apple storyline, right, is kind of left out of that biography, whereas you know, like, you can encounter it in other places. So it's just such a sad story about such an important person in history. But yeah, so I really, really rarely read biographies. It's something I almost never do. I've had von Neumann's on my shelf for a long time. I haven't read it. I've had what's the woman who lived with the great apes for a long time?
Jane Goodall.
Jane Goodall's biography has been on my shelf for a long time. But
I think I was just sitting while you were talking, I was scanning just my own thoughts around what is the reason why I think I wouldn't read a biography, and why I said, oh, I want to read Path to Power or whatever, but
right.
You know, and I think it's because I'm not interested in reading about people's childhoods and all that stuff. Like, I just don't want to read that.
Well, they're not actually stories either. Like, real life is not a story.
But
right?
I don't want to read about, I mean, I don't want to read about someone's childhood abuse or just, I just don't want to read about that. But I do want to read about, like, what made LBJ such an amazing legislator. Like,
right.
Like, people always say that. Like, what does that mean? What did he do?
Yeah, right? You want to see the examples.
I want to see the examples. I want to understand more about that person than just, you know, great society legislation and totally getting into Vietnam quagmire, right? Like,
yeah,
those are the two main stories as president that you know of. But I want to know, like, what was the all the other stuff, right? And I feel like I could read that book and it would tell me that without having to get into, you know, every single story about him and his father and et cetera. I don't know. But
sure.
Maybe it is filled with that. I've never read the book. But for whatever reason, if I were going to read a biography, that's the one I'd read. And
LBJ.
I'm not sure why.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah. I guess the reason why I was asking kind of what you read is I have a very specific way that I read most of what I read. And that is most of my nonfiction, I get in Audible format and I just listen to, you know,
nonfiction.
On now, my
what
commute.
If you fall asleep?
It doesn't happen to me. Yeah, so I generally don't fall asleep unless I intend to fall asleep. Like, I don't sleep on planes, I don't sleep in cars. Like, maybe
one of the many ways that we differ.
Maybe I have a psychological problem that I should get some help with, but it's like it's never been a thing that I've ever done, right? So
really?
So it's never been a problem.
Oh, so my sister and I think have like,
yeah, just narcolepsy when you're reading.
Well, I mean, I've fallen asleep in movies just...
Really?
Oh, countless times.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You're just watching Batman punch someone. You're like,
I've fallen asleep in
boring movie
theaters.
What?
Yeah, more than 10 times.
I'm much more of a nervous person than you are, perhaps.
More than 10 times I've fallen asleep in movie theaters.
Like, what movie were you watching that you fell asleep in?
I fell asleep in WALL-E.
Well, I can understand that. There's no dialogue.
I fell asleep in GoldenEye.
Yeah, okay.
I fell asleep.
I love that you have a list.
In The Hunt for Red October.
No!
One
of my favorite movies as a child.
I did.
No.
Those are the three that come to mind, but there have been others for sure.
I couldn't even tell
you how many movies I've fallen asleep while watching, like, on the couch.
At home, yeah.
Oh, like, I mean, a quarter of all the movies I've ever started, probably.
Yeah, so maybe it's old age. Now I'm like reading a book on
my
Kindle.
No, it's not old age for me.
I did this
in college.
No, I'm like, I have never done it, and recently I've started falling asleep while I'm like, you know, it's like midnight and I start reading a book on my Kindle and like 20 minutes later I fall asleep and then I wake up and
that's
I go.
That's another reason I don't read. Like, I can read about 2 pages at night. So the only time I can really read is like maybe like right after work, like before dinner I can read for a bit.
Oh, wow.
I just can't find times. I don't know.
Interesting. Yeah.
So it's a fall asleep thing. That's a big problem.
So if you start doing something, maybe you need to be poised over a knife or something where you're like balanced in a dangerous way.
So I do not think it is a coincidence that that is why I tend towards playing games as a social activity.
Right. So you stay awake.
Because it keeps me engaged.
Yeah. And you're moving around and being
animated. I'm engaged.
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole thing. Whereas reading... it's
reading a book is not a social activity, just so you know.
Well, no, I know. I know it's not. But people will watch movies as a social activity.
It's true. It's
which
true.
Which I've never
doesn't make sense.
I've
doesn't make sense.
That.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, let's all go over and watch a movie. I'm like, no, that sounds like the worst idea I can think of.
Yeah, like you're just not engaged with anyone at all. It doesn't make any sense.
I mean, what we'll
I agree.
We'll watch, like, we'll have friends over and, like, watch The Americans or something. Because
right.
That takes an hour. So it's like, you know, it's not that long. You watch it for an hour.
Yeah.
And then
45 minutes
whatever,
of
and it's,
distraction.
It's over. It's like just, it's an activity you can do. But like a 2-hour movie, it's like, oh, let's go watch, you know.
Lord of the Rings.
No.
The extended edition.
Oh, my God. Yeah. We've been watching those with the kids. And
oh, wow.
Oh, my. They're so much longer. Anyway, we won't go there.
Got to have all those details. Except for Tom Bombadil. Tom Bombadil doesn't
still
exist.
Still doesn't make it. What in the world?
Stupid Tom Bombadil. Ruins everything. No, so I have a very specific way that I interact with books. I will buy nonfiction in paper form most of the time, or about 20% of the time, and about 80% of the time I'll buy it in Audible format, and I'll listen to it on Audible. And then fiction, I read it on...
So how does Audible work? You have a subscription plus you buy?
No, well, so you have a subscription. I recently re-updated. I had 24 books a year that I would get on Audible, and I downgraded...
Is that 24 a year or 2 a month? There's a difference.
Well, there is a difference, and I have the 24 a year.
Okay.
So, and I just downgraded to 12. And let me open my Audible app. I actually had to complain at them, and it's a whole nother comp. So top of my list, of course, is Insane Clown President by Matt Taibbi. And then The Origins of Totalitarianism by Hannah Arendt, which is the 23-hour and 23-minute book.
What's a nice size for a book? I don't listen to audiobooks.
Well, so there's kind of crazy completionists like me that want to listen to unabridged, right? Uh-huh. And those are like 4 to 7 hours most of the time. But then I have like the Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire, which is like 40 hours. and then there's things like abridged books, which will be like, you know, half an hour to 2 hours. Right. But most of them are around 7 hours, you know, in that kind of time range. Yeah. Like 5 to 7 hours. Guns, Germs, and Steel I have on here. 'Cause I never finished that in its original format.
You need to, though?
That's 16. I want to.
Okay.
I feel like it's one of those obligate, like this is another cue that I have of things that I have not done, which I have not completed Guns, Germs, and Steel, and it's 16-hour and 21-minute length, but I have completed Weapons of Math Destruction by Kathy O'Neill. So, but yeah, no, I, and that's because, things that I'm going to use as reference, right. That I'm going to come back to, I buy in hardback format or paperback format, because you can jump around in a paper book. And then fiction is linear most of the time, right? Like almost all fiction you read from front to back, and you don't say, hey, what happened on page 32, right? I want to go revisit that section. I mean, maybe you do if you're reading it as kind of literary exercise or learning about fiction writing or something, but most fiction, right, you read from front to back. And so I just get it on Kindle and kind of click through it. So
here's some of the books I've added recently, just to give you an idea
of the
breakdown, right? So The Undoing Project by Michael Lewis.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's a total ad because it's Michael Lewis.
Well, and it's Kahneman and Tversky, right?
It's what?
It's Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky.
Yeah,
isn't
but
it?
It's but
But you got it because it's Michael
well,
Lewis.
If it had been whatever,
I've watched his movies. I haven't read any of his books, but but I've read Danny Kahneman's.
But if it was by Joe Musgrave,
right?
I would be like, oh, great. But it's Michael Lewis, so it's like you know what you're getting with Michael Lewis.
Yeah.
You know what you're getting, right?
Yeah.
It's.
I have some of his books. I haven't read them.
Right.
So
the next one I probably won't read, but it's on here. Norse Mythology by Neil Gaiman.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I like Neil. I haven't read any of his stuff for three or four years.
So. Universal Harvester by John Darnielle from the Mountain Goats.
Okay.
So that's his second book. I read his first one, which was weird. Oh. I liked it. This one is going to be even weirder.
For context, Jason is really into the Mountain Goats.
Really?
Really into the Mountain Goats.
Yeah. So that is, the Mountain Goats is one thing that I would say I go deep knowledge on.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So there is something.
Yeah.
It's just that.
Well, it's one thing.
We'll find another thing.
It's one thing.
One of these
things. Where the Mountain Meets the Moon, which is like a young adult children's book by Grace Lynn.
Oh, okay. Do you read a lot of YA?
No, but that's on there because a good friend of mine and his daughter had both like rated it 5 stars.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so I'm like, all right, well, give this a shot.
Goodreads works.
Well, this one I probably won't read. Thomas Friedman.
Oh, God.
Yeah, exactly. But was curious. This is one that I will probably not read or even buy or anything, but I will try to get the gist of. So that was An Optimist's Guide to Thriving in the Age of Accelerations. Just curious. Uh-huh. Robert Caro, The Power Broker, Robert Moses and the Fall of New York.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right? I should add that one to my list. But.
It Can't Happen Here by Sinclair Lewis for obvious reasons.
I know. I've had that on my shelf for like 10 years.
Yeah.
And it's been sitting there and something I should read. And
you have it?
Yeah, I have a paperback copy of it somewhere.
Ooh, can I borrow it?
If I can find it, right, yeah. Great. Unless it was in the Great Purge that I donated 5 or 6.
You could see how much nonfiction there is here. The Aaron Swartz book that you and I emailed about.
Oh yeah, Aaron Swartz,
The Idealist, right? And then The Power of the Powerless by Vaclav Havel.
Vaclav Havel. Oh, nice. We should talk. Well, I need to read some Havel.
So I did not list that to be like, ooh, look at all the whatever, because I will probably read like 3 of those books. But
no, that's your list. The things I was reading are things that are like literally on my phone, like right now, right? Or things that I've finished, right? But I have things like Kitchen Confidential, like Anthony Bourdain's original book.
Well, I can lend you that,
which I love. I really love. Well, he reads. I'm pretty sure he reads this. Yeah,
you're talking about Audible.
Yeah, in Audible, he reads this one, so you get to listen to Anthony Bourdain read that book. It's
that
amazing.
Book's fun. That's just a fun.
I mean, Anthony Bourdain is fun.
He's a good storyteller.
Yeah, he's a good.
That's what he does.
He's good at his job.
He's a good storyteller.
Yeah, I mean, I've got.
I mean, he's probably a bullshitter, but he's a good storyteller.
At some point, it doesn't matter for those sort of things.
It's true.
It's true. Yeah, Vaclav Havel. Wow.
I took Czech for a bit in college, and
really,
I did. And I read Milan Kundera. Read quite a bit by him, and then also Josef Skvoretsky. You heard of him?
No.
He's another sort of famous Czech author from that time.
That time period.
Yeah. So
was never. Yeah. Havel was, yeah, anyway.
Well, Havel was like the president.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He was never president for five terms or whatever.
No, but you've heard of Kundera.
Yeah, no, yeah. No, I know Kundera. I don't know the other guy.
Yeah,
but
Joseph, I think it's Skvoretsky or something. I don't know. I read something by him. But there's always a certain sort of sad dourness to Czech.
Yeah, well, things. I mean, that's Eastern Europe, right? Like, right. Is there a happy part of Eastern Europe?
I really need to figure out what it is about certain... Maybe I should not generalize. Maybe I should just be like, I don't like this book. But there is something about...
About Havel?
No. I was thinking about that Golem and the Genie book that bugs me. There's something about like sort of these like magical realism books that annoys me, and I don't know what it is.
Well, they tend to be sad, right? They tend to be sad.
I feel like they're gimmicky.
Pretentious
pretentiously gimmicky is what bugs me.
Yeah, at the same time, which is funny.
Why?
Well, because if you're pretentious, being gimmicky seems,
at
conflict with
I feel like pretension is sort of like the way that they carry themselves, but I see them as, it's just like, it's a bit gimmicky of like if you want to write a, I don't know, if you want to write a book about about Jewish culture and Arab culture meeting.
Just have two guys at a coffee shop. Come on. Why would you want to have... Why don't you want to have a djinn and a golem?
Exactly.
Says the guy who likes narrative. I think it's interesting. So I have kind of a deep belief that we are narrative animals. And that's one of the reasons why we're really bad at science and really bad at politics is that Manichaean, who is the good guy, who's the bad guy in this story.
Oh, it's our nature. I can tell you from having kids, that's how we start out thinking.
Yeah. No, we're built that way.
We're built that way. Like nuance of things is very hard for kids to get.
Well, yeah, not even nuance, just like that us versus them thing is so wired into us as tribal critters that...
Yes.
I think it's funny. I think it makes it hard for us to read science books or imbibe that sort of thing a lot of the time. And that's why, you know, that's why when we had, now I'm blanking on the great science communicator. Who was the great science communicator of the 70s? What's his name?
Carl Sagan.
That's why when we had Sagan, right? You know, doing his thing traveling through the spaceship of the mind. What was it?
Yes.
Yes. And now we briefly had I'm blanking on his name. I can't remember anybody.
Neil deGrasse Tyson,
right? Our,
I'm up on my pop scientist today.
I'm usually up on my pop scientist, but, you know, had him for a while and they kind of made it into this kind of visual story, which was nice. I just think it's interesting because I think that so informs how we interact with everything, right? Like everything has to be a narrative. I'm so engaged with that on one level as someone who wants to write fiction and does write fiction. And I'm also, I see it as like one of the central problems with us as a society and as like, you know, the super organism that is humanity, right? Is that, you know, we make really dumb electoral decisions, or our voting is often kind of built around these narratives and not around facts, right?
Yeah. It's all storytelling. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. But you know, most of the people, I think most people that would agree with either one of us in any of those domains, right, think of themselves a lot of the times as scientific people, as people who are you know, look, that they're influenced by evidence and logic and those sort of things. And I think at the end of the day, I think we delude ourselves of the time.
I agree.
And it's crazy. But,
there's a podcast that was referenced by a different one that I listened to that I need to go back and, because I was driving and I couldn't write it down.
Oh yeah, okay.
Speaking of stashing stuff somewhere, and I need to go find what it is. But it was about cognition. It was about that whole concept of us.
Was it You Are Not So Smart?
Yes.
Dun dun dun.
Wow.
Dun dun dun.
You are smart.
I'm something. Yeah. So you.
Wow. That is it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's part of the Boing Boing family, okay. if I remember right. And that's pretty nice. Good. When he eats a cookie at the end of every episode, it's hilarious.
I've never listened to it. I just heard someone talking about it. I'm like, ooh, I need to go.
Yeah, and he went off on a kick on logical fallacies, right? So he kind of did an episode per episode. I stopped listening at that point, but
why?
Because
are you the master of those?
No, well, I mean, I'm a human being, so obviously not. But I'd gone through Stephen Novella's series on so Dr. Stephen Novella was host of Skeptics Guide to the Universe. I got the chance to sit across from the table from him because I donated some money to them at one point at a skeptics convention. But he did a whole series on what's the company that does like courses that you can just buy a video or an audio course?
Coursera, the Great Books.
Great Courses.
The Great Courses. Yeah, great courses.
So Dr. Stephen Novella, neurologist and a
podcast. Sponsor of
a podcast sponsor, I might add,
not ours, but
a sponsor of podcasts and giver of monies, and someone that you might like if you like listening to people talk,
have you ever done one of those?
Define done. I mean, they're lectures, right? So you don't have homework or I didn't.
No, don't they cost money?
Well, so here's the thing. Since they're not a sponsor of this, you can go to the library often and pick those up in cassette format, right, and CD format, or at least you used to be able to. And so I went through probably 10 or 12 of them. Like I went through a number of kind of philosophy ones and that sort of thing. I mean, you get whatever they happen to have at the library, and usually it's in cassette tape format. Mm-hmm. So you have to actually have something that can play a cassette tape, which is generally larger than my phone.
I've told you this before. I mean, I've not listened through many of those, but Stacey and I listened to the 26-hour Dr. David Blight Yale series on Civil War and the Reconstruction.
Oh, no. Okay.
I mean, just utterly amazing. I mean, it was like the best class I've ever been to in my life. I mean, it was utterly fascinating. I mean, I like history, the way he tells the story, all of those things. And so I'm like, I need more of David Blight telling me about other things. Like, just, you know, that style of it's so well prepared. You can tell the guy is just completely knows the material. It's like organized in a way where like each lecture makes sense from the lecture before. It's not just all over the place. It's just really well done.
Yeah.
So
no,
I'm like, I need to find more things like that. And I've never really been able to find another lecture series that was anywhere close.
So I think they have an Audible style kind of subscription service. I haven't paid them money for a while now. But I do like the Great Courses. They're fun. My problem with them is I'm concerned how much you learn, in the sense that lectures, you're not as engaged, right? And you're not using the information, you're not writing essays or whatever, and really kind of firming that information up in your mind.
That's probably true.
And it's the same thing with podcasts, same thing with Audible, same thing with like reading a book over Audible or even reading a book in general, right? Like if you're not physically interacting with it. But until that's a thing, right? Until you're taking a Coursera course or something, I think Great Courses is great if you're into lectures, and they're fun, right? Like I
just
want to
be entertained.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you don't want to go teach a college course on the history of the Civil
War. I don't want to go to school. I don't want homework.
Yeah. So it's good. So, so you asked why I kind of stopped listening and I mean, part of it is I have like 35 gigs of podcasts on my phone, and I have to choose which one I'm going to listen to at a point in time. Part of it is there are occasionally more political, like they take more of a political side, which is unsurprising if it's part of that Boing Boing network, right? Like when they're
you stop listening to You're Not So Smart.
Yeah. And it's not like I said, I'm not going to listen to that guy. He's a jerk.
Yeah.
But just like it stopped being super exciting to me. And I'd already gone through the Your Deceptive Mind course that Stephen Novella built,
okay.
Which kind of goes through, how you deceive yourself and make logical fallacies and that sort of thing. So, I mean, there's only so many times I can listen to and this logical fact, like, right. Course.
I should check it out. I'll,
yeah, I'll, but it's a I'll good, it's a good show, and he's a great interviewer.
I think knowing more about that would help me dissect political and current event
so
things, right? Because I'd be able to be like, oh, this person is, using this tactic.
Or, yeah.
And it would help me see false things.
So here's the it will help you find fallacies. It won't help you know whether or not they're actually not true, right? Like, so what the so
no, but it will help me dissect the way that people respond to one another,
right,
as talking heads.
Right, yeah. Right. So I was just listening to I listened to a podcast that I enjoy, but isn't always, it feels like it could be better managed. And as someone who's never actually dealt with multiple people kind of arguing and helping people, I feel like I'm judging someone who's done something I've never been competent at. But anyway, it's We the People Live by Josh Zepps, right? Who I think his catchphrase is make debate healthy again, right? Like, and so he brings on people with opposing viewpoints, and they kind of they in theory talk to each other, but often it's pretty snipey. Mm. And this last time, and obviously recently it's been left leaning people and Trump leaning people, whatever that means. I don't know if it's right or whatever Trumpite. The thing that pains me about listening to those is hearing the left-leaning people. It's like, well, that's a logical fallacy. You see how incorrect you are. And it's just like, it's not, it can be used as a way to not listen to the other person on the other side of the argument.
That's true.
Context Free is a contrarian content production. Find out more information at contextfree.fm along with our show notes. Our theme music is Chocolate and Cocaine by Lorenzo's Music. Find out more about Lorenzo's Music at lorenzosmusic.com.